Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
We're kicking off tonight's Open House with a conversation that I expect will arrest many, many people in our audience who are passionate for social justice. The question posed by my first guest tonight is this: what is social justice? Is it, for instance, about equality, fairness, human rights? And is all that possible? Well, Gary John says those with a passion for causes of social justice may do well to think through what they think is possible. For a start, he challenges deeply the notion of equality or egalitarianism. He reckons very, very few of us really, truly believe in that. He's also lobbing a hand grenade into the whole arena of Indigenous affairs. Gary Johns is a former Keating government minister. He's currently a visiting fellow with QUT Business, and he's also just edited a book called Right Social Justice: Better Ways to Help the Poor. I reckon what he has to say needs to kick off an Open House conversation about social justice, the causes you're committed to, your experiences in seeing that wrongs are set right. Is one of your passions equality for all, egalitarianism? What is it that's fired you up to see social justice achieved? Have a listen to what Gary Johns has to say and give us a call with your response. 1300 40 20 20. Gary Johns, welcome to Open House.
Thanks indeed, Lee.
Thanks very much for your time. Let's kick off with that question to you, Gary. The question you put: you've worked through so much of this. What would you say is social justice?
Well, social justice is a view that says there should be a known distribution of resources within a society. So in other words, someone determines what is a just distribution of resources. Now, the trouble is, who is to determine that?
Yes.
And how long do you wait for that debate to go on before you actually go out and help someone who needs some help? Now, this is an important distinction, especially for the churches who are generally always out there helping. Social justice, to me, is a political ideology, and it's fundamentally an egalitarian ideology. And I don't think that, in fact, most people sign up to egalitarian ideologies. They just want to help those in need. So important to make that distinction.
Why wouldn't they sign up to egalitarianism? Because that's a noble and worthy kind of thing. We'd all like to think we're egalitarian.
Yes, we are in very specific ways. We think that people should, for instance, be equal before the law. But no one, very few people, no one I've ever met signs up to the idea that we should all be paid the same. So once you get down to the distribution of resources, and you'll ask a person, well, what's a fair day's wage? And someone will say, well, I should be paid on the basis of my efforts, my merit. And someone else will say, well, I should be paid on the basis of a contract. And those I'd call liberal notions of fairness. But the one that tends to come through is an egalitarian notion of fairness, which, as I say, tends to say, well, we should all get the same, regardless of how hard we work or how merited is our work. And, of course, very few people actually believe that.
It's a very interesting observation. Let me ask another question you just posed before then. Who determines social justice? What social justice is? Where do you get your framework?
The framework, I think, is overwhelmingly be determined by the group I call egalitarians. And I think far more powerful themes are things like merit, because most people believe that merit is really important, that you should be rewarded on the basis of merit. So we, as a society, have been determining what is, if you like, socially just in a non-egalitarian way for a very long time. But the egalitarians, maybe they have better PR people, I don't know.
Yes.
Or we just fool ourselves that we're all egalitarians. Very few people are, and there's some being good sort of general polling in Australia and the UK and other Western democracies that suggests that most people believe in, if you like, if they use the term social justice at all, in one based on merit, not on equality.
So ultimately, full social justice can't be achieved. What can be achieved with social justice then?
social justice is being achieved every day.
Yes.
Egalitarian social justice will never be achieved because it's pretty crazy. For instance, I'm writing a book at the moment on charities in Australia. A lot of good charities, a lot of good people doing work in the name of charity. But often they'll drift off into this egalitarian world where they'll start to quote to potential donors social justice. And I put a little cross next to that and say, what are they really on about? Are they helping their neighbour who needs help, or are they lobbying the government to get more taxes to transfer from one group of people to another? Now, the second is a highly political act. Most people don't sign up to that ideology. And lots of people say, oh, well, that must be good. No, no, not necessarily.
So what are we going to be able to achieve in social justice in that context?
Well, I would turn that around and say, what can you achieve under social justice that you can't achieve by just getting on and being a Christian? That is, seeking to look after those who are less fortunate. And Christians have been doing that for a long long time, but some of them have discovered government and the ability of governments to tax people, that is, to take their money and to give it to others. And you'll find that that is a very different proposition. It's not social justice as I would see it. In fact, it's simply redistribution. And then the question is, how much do you redistribute? Still, I read every day, it's not enough.
But who, again, are those people who are going to be able to help then?
There are two streams, if you like. There's an involuntary stream, that is, we all vote for governments who promise a certain amount of redistribution. So that's one stream. And the other is the voluntary stream, that is, charities by and large, raise funds from donors privately. And it's those values of those private donors that count in that instance. But unfortunately, the charity market has become quite conflated with government because charities spend a lot of their time lobbying government.
Yes.
For more money. I call the book The Charity Ball because it goes round and round. The charity gets some government assistance to raise donations, and then it uses that money to lobby government for more money. So it goes round and round. And I think we have to be very careful of that.
One of your contributors, Cassandra Wilkinson, deals with this question, when to stop government programs.
Yes.
When is that appropriate?
It's appropriate when the public servant, say, knows that the program is ineffectual. As she described to me, and as we've all discovered in our own studies, that politicians will often say, I know it doesn't work, but I'm not prepared to defund it because I can't bear the front page of the Telegraph or whatever saying minister takes money away from the poor.
Yes.
And this is a great shame because every time you continue to fund things that don't work, those are dollars that can't be used on things that might work.
Yes.
So, for instance, in an area I take great and close watch of Aboriginal policy, we know we are funding things that don't work and will never work, mainly things like make work programs in remote areas, and yet still today the new government, the Abbott government, is still toying around with just continuing to pay people to pick up rubbish in areas where there'll never be work, rather than have an honest conversation to say, you will have to leave this area if you want to work.
So how do you reflect on the huge needs that remain in our Indigenous community? What's your assessment of how governments, even charities, have responded, and what would you do?
We need an honest conversation. You don't have the ideological toil. You just say, has what we've been doing worked? For whom has it worked? And if your answer is it has worked for very few people, and the 100,000 or so Aborigines living on their own land in remote Australia are getting worse, not better. And then you would have a look at those Aborigines who do make it. Those who do make it, by and large, move off the land, just as our forebears did. And they become integrated. That is, they learn English, learn to read and write, get a job, pay taxes, and their own private views, if you like, their culture, I put in inverted commas, because that old culture doesn't really exist anymore. There's just what I call bad behaviour and peer group pressure for bad behaviour. All of that are private matters, but the public side of it is to say we cannot leave children to appalling parents. If they weren't Aboriginal, we would take them and save them. So it's pretty simple. Australian governments should apply the same laws to all Australians because morally we are bound to look after children, especially who are badly cared for, and we would take them into care or whatever else. But we've made an exception for Aborigines. We tend to leave them alone as if they're special. Well, they're not special, they're human.
But you've been a politician, you've been a minister. Who on earth in politics is going to do that?
It is a great question because I can tell you I've been knocking on politicians' doors for 20 years trying to get them to be more honest about this. And in private, yes, they all agree with you. In public, it's quite difficult. There were some ministers in the Howard government. I think Brough started to speak out. Amanda Vanstone started to use the language of integration. Labor tends to go back to its old romantic self when it was in power. So I'm hopeful the new government will at least get on with the business of saying, sorry, we can't solve your problems whenever you sit out on this country. If a mining company comes and trains you up, that's wonderful. Mining companies are doing good work there. But mining companies don't come to every Aboriginal community. In fact, it's reasonably rare. Others will have to move. They'll have to find their life where we have found it in the modern economy.
So for the huge number of people, especially young Australians, who listen to a program like Open House and who have a burning desire to do something about, quote, social justice, how can their passion, their energy and their money be best channeled? To answer your question that you pose in the title of this book, what are the better ways to help the poor, Gary?
If, for example, they want to work through an organisation, then they might approach a charity. You can always work directly with people, but if you want to work in conjunction with others, you'll go to a charity. Look at their annual report. Ask questions of the charity. What is it they do? What's their theory behind what they do? Are they any good at it? Do they spend the money well? Make some inquiries first, and then go and talk to the charity and see if you actually agree with what they're doing. All donors and all young ones should do a little bit of thinking before they dive in. And then when they've done that, dive in and have a shot just like the rest of us did, and we learn as we go.
So when you look at charities, when you look at the activities of government, you seem to be still an optimist for the future.
Oh, very much so. There's an enormous amount of goodwill among most Australians to help out. The only question is where we direct that and look, if we only get it half right, that's still good work. And there are those of us who keep our eye on these matters and try to push and prod and to make the work more effective.
I think this has been a really helpful conversation for many who listen to this program. Gary Johns, thank you so much indeed. The book is called Right Social Justice, Better Ways to Help the Poor. Gary, thanks so much.
Indeed.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.